WEBR Fairfax Radio. You're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew. Welcome. I'm really pleased and delighted to have an author with me today, Bentley Little. Bentley has written a number of horror stories, including one about homeowners associations. He is also a Bram Stoker Award winner for a couple of, at least a couple, maybe more books than that. Bentley, thanks so much for joining us today.
Nice to be here.
How many awards have your books won? I think I found two on the internet.
My first novel won the Bram Stoker Award for first novel, and several of the others have been nominated, but that's the only one that's won. Yeah, my publisher places it on the front covers of all my novels, so it's a little misleading. No, just one.
Well, I thought I found something on your fan club website as well, which is where I went to do a little research.
That's possible. I don't know anything about. I'm not on the internet myself, so I don't know what people say about me on there.
Oh, it's,
could be true, could be not.
It's all glowing. You've got a fan club out there, and it's absolutely all glowing. And I read a letter, and we're going to be talking about one of your books today. It's called The Association, and it's about homeowners associations. But there was an email out there from someone who wrote in and said, "Oh, I just finished Bentley's brand new book, The Association." She says, and she was giggling. She says, "My grandparents live in a gated community in California. I hope their association's nowhere near as bad as this one."
Yeah, good. Well, if I can get the word out, I'm happy.
Oh, I really appreciate you getting the word out, and I'd love to see this made into a movie.
Yeah, I think it's a very timely issue, and I would love to see it made into a movie as well.
What was your inspiration for the book?
Well, in 1990, we bought a vacation home in Arizona, and my problem is that the homeowner association started the year after we bought the place.
There wasn't one when you bought it?
There was a homeowner association, but to be honest, I didn't know much about associations at the time. It wasn't explained well to me by the realtor, and I was under the impression that the association existed to pave roads, dig ditches, and do the sort of community upkeep that cities usually provide, but that weren't available to us because we were in an unincorporated area of the county.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I was led to believe that on the years the roads were resurfaced, dues would go up to cover those costs, and on years where not much work needed to be done, the dues would fall. So I paid my dues the first year, and when I didn't receive a bill the next year, I didn't think anything of it. I just assumed that there was no work that needed to be done, and they didn't need any money. Now, this is a vacation home, so we're only there every few months. And suddenly we showed up for a vacation and then found a notice tacked onto our door. And it said that a lien had been put on our house for failure to pay dues.
Ooh.
And we were required to pay attorney's fees, back dues we owed, and a fine or penalty. I had no idea why this information was not sent to our permanent residence. I mean, the association has our address, and why it was tacked on the door instead. And I don't know why they made no effort to contact me. I don't know. But I called up the association, explained that I didn't know I had to pay dues that year, and I was just told I was liable for all charges. So I poured through my CC&Rs and discovered that while I am required to pay dues each year, the association is required to notify me each year. I had received no notification. So I called them up, said that I would pay the dues that I owed, but that was it. As far as I was concerned, it was their failure to notify me that led to the lien and the attorney's fees and the fine and everything else.
And
I wasn't going to do it, so it was a principle of the thing, I said, and if they insisted on trying to make me pay, I would see them in court. Luckily for me, they blinked. I just paid my dues, and that was it. But that was the start of my problems with them.
And this must have been, what, a number of years ago?
Yeah, this was probably 1991, I would say. And well, I knew from that I was going to have problems. So just to protect myself, I read through the CC&Rs, figured out which of the rules were being broken by other people in the area, especially people who were on the board, and I walked around and videotaped their homes. Many of them were small things involving planting bushes or removing trees, but if they were going to come down on me for anything, I was going to cry selective enforcement and point out all of their inconsistencies. In fact, the president at the time, there was this one prohibition against lawns, because we live in kind of like a forest. There's ponderosa pines and manzanitas, things like that, and they wanted to just leave it natural. So they said no grass. Well, the president at the time had this huge lush lawn in the middle of a drought where we weren't supposed to water. And so I videotaped his lawn just in case. And another rule I remember was no one was allowed to have TV antennas. And a lot of people did. So unfortunately for me, subsequently someone else took the association to court and got that rule overturned because it was illegal to restrict access to public airwaves. But I have my videotape on file in case I need it.
So you're still there? You're still in the association?
Yeah, I'm still there. Periodically they raise their ugly heads and harass me, but I fight back and usually win, so I am still there. Well, one of the most egregious examples occurred when my dad had a heart attack. I was on the bottom deck of our home painting a bookcase. I was going to take it back inside when the paint dried.
Mm-hmm.
But my mom called and said that my dad had a heart attack. So I just dropped everything. Me and my wife locked up the house and sped back to California where we live full time.
Mm-hmm.
He turned out to be okay. And I went back a week later to clean up the mess, only to find a paint complaint form hanging on my door. Some nosy busybody had complained that I'd left the bookcase on my lower deck, and someone from the association had come onto my property to investigate and then written up a complaint. And that was 1997, and I think that was the moment I decided to write the book, because I was just furious. My dad had almost died, and some loser with too much time on his hands had come snooping around my house because he didn't like what was sitting on my porch. I mean, it drove me crazy.
How much time do you spend there if it's a vacation place?
We go there about... Well, my wife works at a junior high school, and it's a year-round school, so she gets like 3 weeks off every spring, summer, winter, fall, so that's when we go there.
So you go just during the vacation period?
Yeah.
Where do you do your writing, Bentley?
In California. When I'm on vacation, I just stay on vacation.
You're on vacation.
I do encounter things that annoy me and irritate me that are fodder for books later on, like that, like the association.
Do you think there's going to be another association book coming out?
No, I've pretty much said all I have to say on the subject, I think.
But they're still harassing you, Bentley.
Yeah, that's true. But I the next book that's coming out is called The Policy, and that's about insurance companies, because I had problems with my insurance company. So there's a whole host of issues that irritate me that I can write about. So I guess I'm just an angry guy.
Well, I think that's great, because one of the reasons I do the show is that so many people have so much to say, and there's really very little means for them to express themselves. So I come in here once a week, and we go on the air, and we put it out on the Internet, and it's out there.
It's good, because a lot of people aren't aware of these things. A lot of people think these are just benign. A lot of people do just automatically conform to those rules, and didn't realize that the people who do not are unfairly harassed, and I think most dystopian or Orwellian novels worry about the imposition of conformity by a central government, and you know, perhaps that's a valid concern, but I've always thought that in a representative democracy like ours, we have more to fear from local tyrants like homeowners associations.
I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you.
Yeah, because we vote for presidents and senators, and we generally know quite a bit about them. The press does a good job of covering the races, and most people have a working knowledge of candidates' positions and where they stand, but that knowledge seems to decrease as it gets more local. Everyone knows their president, most know their senators, but not as many people know who their congressmen are, and while people know their governor, very few can name their state senators or assemblymen, and that's even more true for county and local government. So when you get down to something like a homeowners association, The interest in information simply isn't there, and a lot of people don't know what's going on.
Well, I think a lot of people don't believe that some of these horrors can actually go on. You know, there's this disbelief. Consumers fall in love with a house, and they buy a house. They don't realize what they're buying into.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why the whole concept of the homeowner association just I find offensive. It just galled me that my neighbors have a say in what I do with my own house on my own land. I mean, it's my place. I understand reasonable restrictions. No one wants to live next to a junkyard or a biohazard or something, but these little petty rules and regulations they come up with are ridiculous, and I hate the fact that what I do with my house has to be approved by the moron down the street, that aesthetic criteria are being determined by people I have no respect for, and but who are in a position to impose their taste on me. And people don't realize that the homeless association, when it comes to your neighborhood, three people can form a consensus. And if you're not a nonconformist or you don't get along with a couple of your neighbors, that can mean big problems if there's an association.
Well, one of the things that I noticed in your book was that there's so much that was true to life. I started reading the book and I'm thinking, so where's the horror? This is real.
Yeah.
And you start off with having a yard sale when you move in,
mm-hmm.
to get rid of some of the stuff that was left over by the previous owners. And of course, there you look up and there's someone with a clipboard writing you up. And that is so true. I mean, you know, you're supposed to get permission to have a yard sale. You can only have yard sales on certain days during certain months, you know, when the moon's full and the witches are out,
yeah.
or whatever. You know, where did they come up with all of this?
So a lot of people just, I think, they don't know what to do with their free time. I don't know whether they're retired or they're just bored, or they need to find a hobby or something instead of just spying on their neighbors and harassing them.
What gets me is they come up to you with a straight face when they come up with some of this stuff. It's like, this is normal.
Yeah, and they take it completely seriously. We know that, well, the most recent craziness in our homeowner association is that I have to get approval from the architectural committee if I want to repaint my house, even if I want to repaint it exactly the same color. If I want to make it look exactly the same as it does now, I still have to get permission to do it.
Is it in the covenants?
Yes, it is now. It's a recent amendment.
It's a recent amendment that was approved according to
according to the
rules?
Yes, that was... Well, see, that's the problem with our area, is most of the people are part-timers. So a lot of people, they live in far-flung areas of the country. Some people live outside the country. So most of the people are not there for the annual meeting, including myself. I'm usually not there either because I can't make it at that time. So there's a very small group who have complete control of the homeless association.
Well, they can't change they can't amend the covenants with a small group. You usually have a supermajority requirement, and it has to be an affirmative vote. In other words, 75% of all eligible voters have to agree.
Well, I know I didn't vote for it, and I never received any ballot in the mail either.
And
all I did was receive the amended covenant. And the old one was almost as bad. I mean, I always had to get approval to get my house painted, but it used to be only if you changed the color. Now it's even if you keep the same color. Although I have to say, it's not completely enforced, or maybe I just intimidated them or something, because I painted my house and didn't get approval from anybody, and I've had no problems with that. Basically, these days, I just do what I want and wait and see if there's any complaints, and usually there's not.
And deal with them then, huh?
Yeah.
If they're stupid enough.
Well, I have a neighbor of ours actually threw in a board member off his land and threatened to physically hurt him if he stepped foot on his property again. He was putting in a flagstone planter, I think, and hadn't gotten approval, and the board was threatening to come down on him, and he said, "Get off my land," and kept building, and I really admired that, and I stole it for the book, actually.
Yeah, I do remember that. You know, in the book, throughout the book, what I found very interesting was, and I'm going back to what we were talking about a minute ago, was the CCNRs, and you kept saying that they kept changing. Because in the book, people would come in the middle of the night when you were asleep and switch out the CCNRs.
Yeah.
And put in a whole different set that you didn't even know about. Do you remember writing about that?
Yeah, I remember that.
I thought that was really funny. But for our listeners, if you're going through the same thing, the CCNRs have got to be recorded with the land records in order to be valid. So if they're not recorded, it doesn't matter. Some associations have a number of different ones, versions in the drawer, and they'll pull out whatever version happens to suit their needs at the time. But they have to be recorded in order to be valid.
I was not aware of that.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Yeah. So, I mean, they can come up with all their fancy amendments. And you know, sometimes the boards don't know this. You know, they think that they're in a position to do it. And, well, we need to control the colors. Otherwise, heaven forbid, you know, somebody might paint their house chartreuse. And so they'll just go ahead and amend it, and most homeowners don't realize that they have to vote on it, that if it is an amendment to the covenants, that there is usually a supermajority requirement. Some of them have fudged it and gone to 51%, but it's usually an affirmative requirement. So it's not, you know, a majority of 51% who vote. It's 51% or 75% or 90%, depending on what the requirements are in the governing documents, have got to vote and approve it. And then it has to be, and then it has to be recorded. So keep that in mind, Bentley. Next time you go home and find a pink piece of paper tacked to your front door.
Well, maybe that's why, even though I've been breaking rules, no one's come down on me. Maybe they know that they can't. They're legally not able to do so.
Well, you know, sometimes it's like you said, people who have nothing better to do, and they don't take the time to know what they're allowed to do, and they don't take the time to get educated. They just do it.
Yeah, well, since my initial problems with the association, there's been an almost complete turnover of the board. I think a lot of those people have moved away, and in subsequent years in our area, it's been sort of a transitory position. I mean, people have come and gone, and they've bought homes, then they've gotten on the board, then they've moved away. So I think, in a way, that's helped people like me, because they don't have as much invested in it as those older people did. They're happy to, you know, wield their power while they're there, but they're not that committed to the community, because they're not really of the community, and they're soon going to be gone.
And so they're only there part-time.
Yeah.
You know, before we went on the air, you said that when I talk to my neighbors, nobody likes the association.
Yeah, that seems to be the case. I admit I don't talk to all of my neighbors, but the few I do talk to seem to share my opinions.
Was there a Ray and Liz in your association when you first joined?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you say it again.
Ray and Liz, your neighbors, the older guy who came up to you during the...
Yes. They're based on a much younger couple, but yes, they are based on real people.
They are based on real people. For the listeners now, you're going to have to read the book, guys, because, you know, we're not going to tell you everything in here. We're just going to give you some highlights because I think you'll enjoy it, but... This, I think, really needs to be made into a movie.
But yeah, I think that would be terrific. I mean, even, of course, I think so, because I wrote it, and I would love to get all the money from a movie. But even as a viewer, I would think even if I had not written this, I would be interested in that movie, because I think it's a subject that affects a lot of people these days.
50 million Americans live in an association.
That's amazing.
And where I live, which is a suburb of Washington, D.C. in Northern Virginia, Fairfax County, 90% of all housing is in a mandatory homeowners association. So there are very few choices, and all metropolitan areas now have a mandate.
Well, that surprised me when we bought this. That's why I didn't really expect it, because I mean, when I heard about home, I had an only vague idea of what a homeowners association was or did, but I was assumed they were in suburban areas or gated communities within larger metropolitan cities. So to find our little ragtag group of homes on the hill out in the middle of Arizona, we had a homeowner association, kind of surprised me. But yeah, they're not just metropolitan areas anymore. They're encroaching on everything.
Oh yeah. See, the local municipalities think this is really wonderful because they can still collect taxes and just shunt all their responsibilities off onto the private sector. And
yeah.
So they mandate them. When a developer comes in, they have to provide an association to take the pressure off the local government.
Yeah, that's a horrible thing.
And then you're stuck with the people next door telling you what color you can paint your house and whether you can leave a bookcase on the lower deck.
Yeah. Or also in the case of ours, or whether you can have children's toys in your driveway. We are not allowed to have children's toys in our driveway.
No children in the driveway.
You're not supposed to have little tricycles or cars or whatever kids want to play with. You know, we have a 4-year-old son, and I purposely bring his toys out and let him play in the driveway just to irritate my neighbors.
Well, in the book, I mean, you dedicated the book to your son.
Yeah.
And you said, can I read this?
Sure.
It says, with the hope that he will never have to deal with the petty stupidity of a homeowners association. And I read that and I thought, all right, I'm going to like this book.
Well, yeah, you know, I was thinking about that. He's going to, you know, when I die, he's going to inherit the place, and I'm hoping by the time he's gone, there won't be one. My goal in life is to win millions of dollars in the lottery, buy up every spare lot in our development, having a vote to control the homeowner association, in which case I would either use all my votes to disband it or install myself as king and make a life of living hell for those petty little people who've been throwing their weight around for years. And I think I put that fantasy in the book as well. I think the main character thinks about that also.
Yeah, well, the main character sort of is going to leave, and then he decides, no, he's going to stay and fight them, and then he's going to leave, and then he's going to stay and fight them. And it's very true to what a lot of people have gone through in their associations. Do we stay and fight? Do we say to hell with it and move? And so you stayed and fought.
Well, yeah, that is a tough thing because that's your home. And as much as you have problems with your neighbors, a lot of times, or you're not your neighbors, but your association, you probably still want to live there. You just want to live in peace. You don't want to be harassed.
You want to be left alone.
Exactly.
Did you do any research for the book, or was it all based on
no,
your
No, it was based on personal experience and everything else I made up. So, no, I'm very lazy and never do research.
Well, you know, a lot of the restrictions that you talk about, no pets in associations, for instance, you know, that's universal. They either have no pets or they have rules against pudgy pooches. You know, your dog can't weigh more than.
Oh my God! I didn't even know that.
You didn't?
No, I would have a weight restriction. I would have put that in if I knew about that.
Oh yeah, yeah. And you know what? Some of them have accused some associations have accused their members of having fat dogs, and so they've ended up in court weighing the dogs in court. And the dogs sort of, they put this struggling dog on the scales in the courtroom, and they come in a few ounces under the weight limit or a few ounces over the weight limit. So they're right at the weight limit. But yet
ridiculous.
It is. You know what I find even more ridiculous, Bentley? Is if you have a dead tree on your property, in some associations you have to get permission to cut down a dead tree. And then before you can get permission, they have to convene a committee to decide whether or not you may cut down a dead tree.
Actually, a similar situation came up in our property last year because we're in a severe drought situation there in northern Arizona, and a lot of it's like a ponderosa pine forest, and a lot of ponderosa pines are being eaten by bark beetles and. Because the trees are weakened by drought, so there are just acres of brown trees, and if the trees aren't cut, then the beetles spread to nearby trees. So the association put out a little newsletter last year and said, "Everyone, if you have dead trees on your property, cut them down, or we're going to cut them down for you."
Mm-hmm.
So I got this letter that said, "You have one." It's kind of a form letter with just blanks in it, and then it said, "You have one dead tree on your property. That if you do not cut it down by this time, we will cut it down and charge the bill to you." Well, as luck would have it, we were going there like a couple weeks later. So I went and looked for my dead tree. You know, all the trees looked fine. And then I found, hidden between two little manzanita bushes, there was this maybe 2 foot high Christmas tree that we bought last year. We bought this little baby tree for my son's room. And then we planted it outside. Well, the tree had died. And this was the one they were going to hire a tree trimming service to come and get and then charge me for. So I walked over,
tree.
I pulled it out of the ground in about a minute, and was done with it. But it was ridiculous that they were... Actually, that irritated me, too. I know they have the right to come on my property and inspect certain things, but they had to be looking very closely to be able to find that spot and find that little teeny tiny tree.
It's ridiculous, isn't it? They are allowed to come on your property?
Yes, they are. Yeah.
It's in the covenants, huh?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
I looked at that too, because when I got my first warning, I was going to say, hey, you guys don't have the right to come on my property. So I looked that up in the CC&Rs, and sure enough, they do. They have the right to come in and not just, you know, give me warnings, but also to inspect the property. And they have, in our area, they have yearly inspections. So they have this big checklist, and it says, do you have too many pine cones on the ground or whatever? And you have to resurface your driveway. And I think a couple of years back, they did complain about something of mine, and I ignored it. And it didn't show up on the checklist next year, so I think they thought I fixed it.
Have you ever been fined?
Except for that one time when I didn't pay dues, no.
Okay. Because you talk about fines throughout the book, where you were being fined for all sorts of things. One of the ones I loved was that both your cars weren't faced in the right same direction in the driveway.
As the book went on, I was just trying to think of more and more restrictive things that I could do. And yeah, as it turned out, you know, when I reread it afterwards, a lot of them that I thought were far-fetched at the time turned out that seems completely believable to me now.
Well, the thing is, you know, as I said, when I was reading it, I'm going, yes, so where's the horror? Okay, so, you know. Where's the horror? I mean, I thought this was supposed to be a horror story. I'm looking for, you know, for all these grisly things, but...
found out, huh? It's a documentary.
Yeah. It's sort of taken out of the pages of the newspapers. One of the restrictions that you talk about, which I thought was really apropos, and I wondered if it applied to you, but obviously not, was where in the book you were not allowed to write at home because the lot was for residential purposes only.
That actually, a couple of years ago, before we had our son, we considered moving there full time just because we liked the area, and I was doing fairly well writing my novels, and we could afford to do so. So I looked into that, and I looked in the CC&Rs, and sure enough, there's a restriction about having businesses in your home.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided to stay in California because we thought it would be a better place for our son to grow up. So I never really followed up on it. But when I was writing the book, I remembered that, and I thought, I wonder if that would have applied to me. I mean, I assume they mean some sort of business that would impact traffic or have some impact on the community. But knowing what morons those people are and what idiotic rules they've instituted, I thought, possibly not. Maybe if they did find out that I was making a living out of my house, they would try to prevent me from doing it.
Well, I read an article a number of years ago about an author who lived in a co-op in New York City. And some of the neighbors were, the co-op manager, whoever happened to be walking past, and he noticed that this guy was always home. And then he realized that he was actually writing a book in his unit.
Huh.
And they told him that it was a business, and therefore it was not allowed by the association.
Oh, interesting.
And he had to go and rent an office to write his book.
That's exactly what happens in my book. I mean, I just extrapolated from what I thought might happen to me, but that's amazing that actually did happen to somebody.
That happened. I've read about that. I've also read where it's gone even beyond that, where somebody had a website. And, you know, that she managed, I guess, from her condo. And that was here in Virginia because they contacted me looking for help some time ago. And one of the board members happened to be doing some resurfing the net or something and found her website and said, oops.
Oh, my God.
You got a website.
No, I can understand they don't want to have, you know, a manufacturing business or something that's going to impact the environment or cause a lot of cars to be parked on the street or things that are going to bother your neighbors. But something like that, something that you do in the privacy of your own home that no one even knows about, there's no reason to have a prohibition on that.
It doesn't impact anybody.
No.
Yeah, I wondered, because when I was reading that, and, you know, the character in the book is an author, and just for you guys out there, because obviously Bensley knows what he wrote, but, you know, he had to... leave the association, go into town, where there was a very hostile relationship, an adversarial relationship between the townies and the owners in the association.
Which is also based on reality, I might add.
Okay, I wondered about that. Yeah. Is your association in a gated community?
Yes, it is. It didn't used to be. And they had a vote maybe 5 or 6 years back on whether to install a gate. And it passed almost overwhelmingly, which surprised me a little bit. I voted against the gate. I thought it was a complete waste of money and time. But they did want to have a little exclusive community there. And that's not really the reason that the people in town hate us. The main reason is because of the water shortage in town. We have our own separate wells.
Oh.
But it extracts water from the same water table. So we're depleting it at this enormous rate, and the people downtown have a lot more restrictions on them. And they're people in the homeowner association up there watering their cars, and people down there can't water their lawn. I mean, they're washing their cars, and people down there can't water their lawns. So it's getting ridiculous because last summer, I think, they had to bring these big trucks filled with water. People had to go there with their little jugs of water to get water. And not us people up on the hill. We were living high.
And there was no sharing, obviously.
No. They're two totally separate systems, and they're totally unconnected. I mean, they're taking water from the same source, but two different companies own them. So, they have different rules applied to each group.
Have
created resentment.
There was a story out of Arizona a few months ago about this couple who moved from the Phoenix area up into, I can't remember exactly where, it was out in the country in Arizona someplace, and they bought this land because they did not want to be part of a homeowners association. And for years, this property had always bought their utility, their water, from the adjacent association. And when they moved in, the association said, "You have to join us." And they said, "No, we don't want to. We just want to buy the water." So they cut off their water. They waited until it was really, really hot, you know, 108 degrees. And they cut off their water to try and force these people into joining the association when they didn't want to.
Oh, my God. I would have used that, too, if I knew about it.
Well, you see, Bentley, you got another book to write here.
Ever since I wrote it, I've received a lot of horror stories from various people who
have you really
live in homeowner associations.
Yeah, I get into this. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. Don't you dare go away. We'll be back with more with Bentley Little.
Finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.
WBR Fairfax Radio, welcome to On the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew. And on the Commons with me today, I'm thrilled and delighted to have Bentley Little. Bentley is an award-winning author of numerous horror stories, including The Association, which is a story that's based on his own experiences. And although it says it's a horror story, over 400 pages seem to be mostly real life. Thanks for joining us, Bentley. This is a lot of fun.
Thank you for inviting me.
We have a couple of quick emails I want to read to you. One of them is, thanks, I just ordered my copy and it sounds like a delight to read. To take the edge off, I have been living in my own private home for over a year now, but I still have nightmares from the experience of being in a co-op and a condo.
Well, you should enjoy the book then.
They'll love the book, I can guarantee that. I'm looking forward to your show tomorrow. Please tell your guest I loved reading The Association. Once I started it, I could not put it down. Please ask your guest what prompted him to write this book. I believe his children had a bad experience. What was it? Why did he pick Utah? Has he ever lived in Utah?
No, I've never lived in Utah, although I've traveled there extensively. But the reason I set the novel there is because if I set it in Arizona, some people might recognize themselves and try to sue me. So I just put it in the next state up.
So you put it in Utah instead, huh?
Yeah. Otherwise, I mean, geographically, almost all the descriptions in the book, everything is our little area. I just basically substituted the word Arizona for the word Utah.
Now, I said, you know, I told you when I started reading this, I wondered where the horror came from because it all looked like it was straight out of real life. And these are all stories that I've heard from. You know, but then towards the end of the book, we started to get into the horror portion of it. And there was a lot of symbolism that I thought it was symbolic. And I don't know if that was what you had intended.
Most likely, yeah. I'm always, I'm a stutter here, but I'm always annoyed when critics or the intelligentsia dismiss horror fiction out of hand as though literary merit can be determined by subject matter and ghosties and ghoulies simply aren't serious enough for consideration. But to me, I think the reason horror fiction lasts, the reason it speaks to people over several generations is that it enables the writer to deal symbolically and metaphorically with issues in a way that's not possible within the parameters of serious fiction. I think a straightforward, realistic novel about a homeowner's association wouldn't be as interesting or as powerful as a horror novel about the same subject, because I'm not sure it would arouse the same passions. William Faulkner said that the purpose of fiction is to reveal the truth behind the facts, and I think horror fiction allows me to do that. So yeah, I do tend to use symbols and metaphors from the supernatural to sort of illuminate the realistic portion of the book.
Well, one of the symbolic, I guess, characters is Thumpy.
Yeah, people seem to either love or hate the character.
Well, Stumpy, you know, to me, symbolizes the complete and utter helplessness that people feel when they're being targeted by their associations, because they can't talk.
Exactly right. That's exactly what I intended.
And they couldn't hit back, and they couldn't run away. They were basically stuck.
Yeah. I mean, the inspiration for it is a little more mundane. There's several deer who live in our area and wander through the green belt and through people's property and generally go wherever they want to go. People feed them and have sort of adopted them. They're kind of community property pets. We also have a javelina who are not quite so cute and actually cause a lot of problems with people's gardens. But one time I was out hiking and I was getting pretty far away from the houses and I heard a rustling in the underbrush. I figured it was a lizard or a bird or something, maybe a squirrel. But then it sounded louder and bigger and spookier, and I started back the way I'd come. It was probably a deer, could have been a javelina, but the image that came to my mind was of a deranged, legless man pulling himself through the forest. I spooked myself and ran back to the road. That image stayed with me, and I exaggerated it for the purposes of the story. In the novel, I have the association punish people by making them into these, I call them stumpies in the novel, which are basically armless, legless people with their tongues ripped out.
Mm-hmm.
But in a way, it wasn't just punishment. It was an extension of their power over the individual. They weren't dictating only what a person did with his house and yard, but with his body. The association in this book controls everything. And it's sort of a logical extension of where the homeowners associations are right now.
Well, what I got was that this guy, you know, Stumpy, was completely and totally helpless.
Yeah.
Could not talk because homeowners have been told they're not allowed to talk to their neighbors. This is true. They've been threatened by the association attorneys. They, you know, they couldn't hit back because they no longer had hands and arms. They couldn't run away because they no longer had legs and feet. And they were Stumpies.
Yeah, they're completely created by the association, by all the rules and restrictions that were imposed on them. That's what they ended up being.
I gave the book to a friend and I said, read it. And a few days later, I get this call from her and she says, I woke up in the middle of the night in a cold sweat. She says, I was having these horrible nightmares. They were trying to make my husband into a Stumpy.
That's funny.
What did you want the reader to get out of the book? What was your main message, I guess?
I wanted to sort of instill the same hatred of imposed conformity that I have on the reader and make them as angry about homeowners associations as I am.
So basically tell them to dare to be different.
Yes, and on a more pragmatic level, don't buy into a neighborhood of the homeowners association. Or if there's a vote coming up, vote against it.
Yeah, we saw one of the meetings in this association. The place is called Bonita Vista.
Yeah.
And complete with closed circuit television where they have hidden cameras in the home and they take pictures of you doing all sorts of things and then broadcast them so that the homeowners can see all of that.
Yeah. I'm real paranoid about having my work seem similar to someone else's, and I'm always afraid people think I stole the idea. So I wasn't happy. Halfway I was through writing the novel, The X-Files did an episode about homeowners association.
Yes.
And their story took place in suburbia. Mine takes place in rural Utah. And there aren't that many similarities plot-wise, but clearly the writer of that story was tapping into that same hatred of conformity that had motivated me to write the novel. And it drove me crazy if someone had beaten me to it. If I hadn't been so far along, I would have scrapped the book entirely. But
oh, I'm glad you didn't.
And kept on writing anyway.
Oh, I'm really glad you didn't, because I thoroughly enjoyed the book. I couldn't put it down. And this is the first novel I've read in years. I just didn't have time, you know, I didn't have time to read for pleasure. And this is the only novel I've read in ages.
It is hard to find time. I mean, it's hard for me to find time to read novels.
Well, I find myself reading a lot, but it's not, you know, it's more legal stuff and trying to read these articles about what's going on. And people aren't allowed to fly flags. They're not allowed to do anything. They're not allowed to water their yards. They're fined if they do water them. They're fined if they don't water their yards. You know, it depends on who's doing what. So you're sort of caught between a rock and a hard place. You don't know what's right and what's wrong. But going back to the symbolism, which I really liked, there was, towards the end, when the book was coming to an end, you were invited to go in and fight the president.
Yeah.
And to get to the arena, you had to crawl through this long tunnel, basically. And I don't know what you intended, but what I got was I could imagine the gladiators going in there, and you had all the homeowners sitting in this arena, waiting, and chanting mindlessly.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking of when I wrote that scene.
Oh, cool. So I got it, huh?
Yeah. That whole last part, I mean, throughout the novel, he seems to believe, because as I do, he talks to his neighbors, and most of them seem to agree with him. So he thinks that he sort of sees the association as just the board, the association board who's imposing this on him. And then at the end he finds out that all his neighbors have been voting for these CCNRs, and they all really secretly pretty much agree with him. And that sort of mob mentality or that sort of conformity, I think, I had it lead to mob violence in here, but that's kind of sort of what I was going for.
But instead, I'm sorry.
Oh no, go ahead.
I was going to say instead of resolving the issues in a civilized manner, it came down to hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah.
Between the main character of the book and the president of the association and the prize, and it was, you know, fight to the death, and the prize was the presidency, right?
Yes. Well, see, despite the veneer of civilization that's put on these helmet associations, I think it is kind of like mob rule, and it is I think this desire to make your neighbors have exactly the same things you have or do things the same way you do is a very primitive impulse. And so, yeah, that's why it sort of devolved into that primitive style of solving a dispute.
And one of my favorite symbolic things was, you know, you had alluded to the fact throughout the book that the board was not human.
Yeah.
You know, they had a lot of makeup on. They wore capes. They wore disguises. And when it got down to the hand-to-hand combat, the main character, the hero of the book, if you will, was losing.
Yeah.
Until he remembered that there was a covenant that said you couldn't wear robes outdoors.
Yeah.
And it was the covenant, basically, that, oh my gosh, he's you know, Article 8.
Yeah, that's always been the only successes I've ever had in fighting them has been using their own rules against them. So I did incorporate that also.
But then there was the other one, Article 15, I think it was, and that basically said no bald heads.
Yeah.
And
that's kind of a funny one.
Now that's one that I hadn't heard of before. But basically what happens is then you really get into, I think, what's really great, because his wig falls off, and you notice that there's the same very thin, transparent skin on the top of his head, but it's not normal, it's not human.
No.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, go on.
No, I was going to say I toyed with the idea of making these board members some sort of monsters, but then I decided that really they've just been corrupted by the power they've been given. It's just the power of the association or the power they've had over these other people has corrupted them and turned them into these monsters. That originally they were probably people, but when they started working for the association, they started doing all this. That's when they turned into what they turned into.
But the black worm-like things that seem to be showing through his thin skin,
mm-hmm.
you know, that made him actually not human. And the black, of course, is always associated with evil.
Yeah.
And so you had this malevolence that was oozing out.
Yeah, that was intentional.
That was intentional.
I also wanted to show the sort of the fickleness and stupidity of conformity, because the crowd at first is chanting for the hero's death, and by the end of it, they're chanting for the death of the homeowners of the president. They just go with whichever way the wind's blowing, which I think explains a lot why a lot of these ridiculous rules get into place, because I think if people just sat down and looked at them objectively, they would see how absurd they are. But they get involved, they get caught up in this, and they just lose their individuality and conform to what the group thinks says they should think.
But yet, eventually, they did come down to the hero's aid, because they came down from the stands and they started pummeling the president. And sort of helped him. I have two questions
Okay.
that sort of when I was reading the book, why the robes? Where did the robes come from?
Amazingly enough, a friend of mine who had been in a homeless association here in Southern California told me about that, that he was not... This sounds too absurd to be true, and perhaps he made it up and told it to me this, so I would use it. But he used to go out and get his bathrobe, get his newspaper in his bathrobe, and he found out that his homeowner association said he's not allowed to do that.
Oh, really?
Now, that sounds a little bit far-fetched to me, but I like the idea, and I stole it for that.
Well, I know condos tend to have dress codes. You can't wear shorts, you can't go barefoot, you can't wear this, you can't wear hair rollers. I mean, the condominiums do have these rules. But I'd never heard of the bathrobe bit. I think that's great.
I think in the novel, that's the way it's intended, and he puts a different interpretation on that rule. I mean, they're wearing the robes just to look more magisterial, I guess, or look more like judges, or give themselves a sense of importance. And he turns that rule that's aimed at getting people not to wear bathrobes when they pick out the newspaper, he turns that against them. And his interpretation of robes is different than theirs, but it applies. Which I think also shows how some of these rules, depending on the interpretation you put on them, they can swing either way.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. That was the one thing that I couldn't figure out where that came from. Everything else, believe it or not, as horrible as some of the stuff may seem, it's true to life. I hate to say that.
Yeah, real life is a horror, isn't it?
It is a horror. It really is. I mean, I started off my promo with, does art imitate life or does life imitate art? And in this case, it's kind of hard to tell which came first, the chicken or the egg.
Go ahead.
Go on.
No, I was going to say, yes, it's a slight exaggeration of things that happen to me. That's all it is. And I emphasize the slight. Except for the supernatural sections, the rest of it could be true.
Well, the supernatural section was actually, I think, the symbolism.
The dual purpose. It was meant to sort of reinforce the themes that were brought up previously and more explicitly, perhaps. But it also is there to appease my fans because I'm a horror writer. I have to put that stuff in my novel.
Well, I wonder how many of them live in associations. Probably a lot of them.
And hopefully this will rile them up a little bit.
Oh, I hope so. I mean, I'm hoping to see a lot happening after we broadcast this, because this interview will be on the internet and will be available, and it will be archived up there, so people can go in download it and hear it and listen to it and do all that.
Hope I didn't embarrass myself too badly.
I think you did a great job, but I have one last quick question for you. Whatever happened to Liz?
It's been so long. I'm sorry to disappoint you, but it's been so long since I've written the novel, I can't remember.
Well, she
I had in mind for her eventual fate.
Well, she was in the stands, and I think she's the one who told you, Article 15. She sort of let you know that bald heads. But that was the last we heard of her.
Yeah, well, I assume she's still there. I think the association, it may have come back, but the place is pretty much destroyed at the end of the novel, and it may be a little, perhaps it's a little more benign homeowner association than it turned out to be, but... Maybe she moved. I don't know.
Okay, you just sort of dropped her. She was in the stands, and you walked up.
It's up to the reader to decide her eventual fate.
I wonder, now, where's Liz? Because her husband was killed by the association early on.
Yeah, and at a certain point, she's tempted and maybe perhaps corrupted by them, but she swings around again to the good guys at the end.
She certainly was. She was a very sympathetic character. I hope I've whetted everybody's appetite, because I really think you need to read this book. It's a great book. Once you start, you won't be able to put it down. I guarantee that. And if you're squeamish, don't be, because you're living this. So this is what's really happening to you. Bentley, thank you so much. I really appreciate you joining me today on the Commons.
Well, thanks for having me on.
And if you ever decide to write another novel about associations, let me know, and I will send you all kinds of horror stories.
Oh, that sounds good.
So thank you, everybody, for joining us. Please make sure that you stay tuned, because coming